Welcome to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films, every Friday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific and online at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Acclaimed documentarian Lana Wilson, known for such films as Miss Americana, Pretty Baby, Brooke Shields, and After Tiller, turns her eye for intimacy and revelation on sessions between psychics and clients. A doctor wants assurance about a young girl who died in her care, an adopted young woman inquires about her birth parents, and so on and so forth. It is a beautiful film to not only just to watch, but also to take in, because there's a lot here and there's a lot of questions I'm sure she's been asked already, and I want to get right to it. We're joined today by the director of Look Into My Eyes, and that would be Lana Wilson. Lana, welcome back to Film School Radio.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, it was really just such a joy to watch this film for a lot of reasons, unexpectedly in some ways, because I think anyone who knows about psychics or has spent any time, you know, watching them on television, the kind of the cartoonish version that we often see, there has to be trepidation going into watching something like this about what to expect. Tell me how you approached this. What brought you to a point where you wanted to do this particular film, Look Into My Eyes? And how was your radar as you went through this process in terms of assessing what you were hearing and what you were feeling, I'm sure, during the process of making this film?
Well, I had the idea for the film the morning after the 2016 election, right after Donald Trump was elected president. I had been filming in Atlantic City for this omnibus movie about the election, and it was a terrible night, did not go the direction I thought it would go. So the next morning, I was waiting for my ride back to New York, where I've lived for almost 20 years, and feeling depressed, heartbroken, upset, at a loss, and having never been to a psychic before, I saw this sign. But so I walked into this storefront psychic, and there was a table and two chairs, and no one was there. And I sat down in one of the chairs, and the moment I sat down, I had this sensation of clarity. Like, I felt like I was looking in a mirror, and it felt like this flash of me seeing my own internal, incredibly vulnerable state at that moment. And it was very powerful, and I actually felt emotional just sitting down. I kept thinking, this is crazy. Why are you tearing up? No one's even here. But it was interesting to realize that. And then the psychic came in and sat down, and we talked for a few minutes, and I felt comforted by what she said. And then when I left, she said, what do you do for a living? And I said, well, I'm a documentary filmmaker. She said, what kinds of movies do you make? And at that time, I was finishing this film called The Departure about a priest who counseled people considering suicide. And the psychic said, that sounds like my life. I said, what? And she said, you wouldn't believe the situations people come in here with. People come at real crossroads in their lives. We're kind of like a court of last resort in some cases. And that for me was the light bulb moment of, I had no idea such serious situations were discussed in psychic readings. And I thought, wouldn't this be an incredible setting for a film? And I think in terms of the other part of your question about my own perspective on it, that experience for me was so much, it wasn't about if what the psychic was saying was true or not, or if I believed her or not. And I don't even remember what she said. All I remember is that I felt better at the end of it, that I, a lifelong skeptic, felt comforted by talking for 5 minutes to a psychic. So that's what stayed with me. And you know, you always try to go into a filmmaking process being curious and open for discovery in all ways. And I was with this film. And did I see moments that were, you know, magical? Sure. Did I see moments where the psychic's not connecting to the client at all? Yes. You know, I saw the whole range. But my biggest takeaway is that it's not about this dichotomy of believing or not believing. It's about the emotional experience that's happening in the room for the two people who are sitting there. And that's where the power comes from, I think, more than from a supernatural place.
And I will tell you, that mirrors the reaction that I had to watching the film. Because there's no quantifiable way to assess what is the transaction between people who are sitting in front of a psychic. Yeah. There's no way to know. I know there have, you know, you hear about tricks that people, these people have picked up along the way to kind of give the sense that they know more than they actually do. But as I'm watching the film, at some point it didn't matter. My guardedness just kind of dropped because I was willing to believe. And I say believe in the way that the film in that sense of letting go. When I watch a film, I want to be taken somewhere. And this is what this film does for me. And I think this is so important that you brought up, which is this relationship that's taking place between the people, the psychic and the person sitting there with them. At the end of the day, what's the most important part of that relationship, right? Is the person getting something that is healthy and positive in terms of their reaction to what the psychic is saying? Mm-hmm. I think that's good enough for me. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah. I mean, I see it as not unlike any other religious belief system. And that I think it's a way for us as humans to make sense of the world. And in some cases to make sense of our grief. And I think that there's beauty and joy in our lives and in the world, but there's also just unimaginable violence and horror and pain and awful things happening that have no inherent meaning. And how do we cope with that as people? How do we cope with that every day? And I think religion and spirituality in general is an answer to that. You know, one of the people who's in the film, it's a young woman who is an adopted person who's asking about her birth parents. And she actually came to one of the screenings this weekend. And we talked afterwards. And she said, yeah, it's amazing because it's not about believing or not believing. It's just that this experience gave me closure. I decided that I am going to believe what he said about my birth parents because I want to have an answer. And I want to turn the page in my life and think about other things more. And she was very conscious of that, you know? So I think it's more about, and again, it's like any other religious system in that way, that it's like, I don't think it's about proving that what you believe is true or not. I think it's about how does believing this affect you here on earth and in your life now? It's not about proving or disproving the idea of an afterlife, for example. It's about, well, what does it mean for you? How does it shape you to believe in an afterlife or to not believe in an afterlife? What is that doing for you? And I think that either way can be positive or negative for different people, depending on each of our own circumstances and histories and identities and situations. But I think you're right that it's just about, we all have to find the path that is the most helpful for us.
Yeah, it's such an interesting place to explore because it's religion without the rule book. Mm-hmm. It is a sense of the essential human need to be reassured that we're here for a reason in some manner of speaking, whatever that might be, and that our exploration of this time here is we're looking for the positive. Almost every, I can't think of anybody in the film who wasn't looking for something positive to be brought from the relationship they shared in those moments. Yeah. So it is that internal search for some reason, which is what religion is about, right? And yet at the same time, you're writing the rules as you go along in this conversation you're having. You're making up the roadmap as you move forward, right?
That's true. And you know, there's a comparison at one point in the film that I make basically to improv theater. I'm wondering, how is this different than improv theater? You know, and one of the psychics who has a background in performance is like, yes and no, you know, and she says, I think that really great improv theater performers are totally connected psychically. And I think we've all seen, you know, performances or artworks, whether it's a musician or an actor, where it does seem like the people in that collective are operating on some other plane together and connecting in that way. And, you know, there's a very powerful scene in the film between this psychic and a young man who comes to her saying, I have just found the document of my great-great-great-great-grandfather being sold into slavery for $250. And I'm trying to understand how to live with this. What does this mean for me? And they have an experience together, the psychic and this man, that it's like a shared visualization, but it's undoubtedly real. And so I kept coming back to this place in the film, which is that something can be artificial and real at the same time. And I think any therapist would say an emotional experience is real for the person who's going through it. Yeah, I became really fascinated in the parallels between art and performance and psychic readings. And that experience, I think anyone who loves, you know, movies, for example, has had the experience of sometimes you can go into a movie theater and you can cry more than you cry in your real life, or the movie you're seeing can feel more vivid than your real life. Yeah. You can also have a dream that feels more vivid than your real life. So even though all of that stuff isn't, quote, real, it's real in a different way in that it's meaningful and it affects you. And you know, it's true, I think, what you were saying earlier about many people are looking to kind of be reassured and comforted and hear something positive. I think that's true. But one of my favorite scenes in the movie is actually when the exact opposite of that happens, when this guy goes in to see this pet psychic asking about his pet lizard, Bobby Jr., who was basically kidnapped by a zookeeper to New Jersey. And he's asking, you know, is my lizard okay? Is Bobby Jr. happy? And the pet psychic says, no. You know, he's much less emotionally happy in New Jersey than he was with you. And you can see this guy is a bit horrified. He's kind of like, well, should I go try to rescue him from New Jersey? And the psychic says, and I think if she was saying just what you wanted to hear, you'd expect her to say, oh, don't worry, he's going to be fine. Or yeah, go try to find that lizard. He misses you. Instead, she's like, no. He's not doing well. He's gone, though, and you're never going to see him again. You can't get him back. It's over. Her words are, it's over. And she then compares it to a person who's gone, a person who we've lost, whether through death or, you know, if you break up with a romantic partner, whatever, the person is gone, but you do still have a relationship with them because they're still affecting you. They're still impacting your life. And I thought that was a really wise answer because it's true of everyone and it's true of history in general. It's gone, but it's not gone because it's shaping all of us. All the people we've lost are gone, but a part of them is not gone because they're affecting us. And I think accepting those dual, and it might seem contradictory, but it's actually the truth that both of those things can exist at once is a part of psychic readings and of this film.
I want to remind our listeners we're speaking with Lana Wilson. She is the director of this terrific documentary film called Look Into My Eyes. So if you're listening to our conversation, seek this out, please, because it is really, really well done. It's terrific stuff. And what you just said, there's two major questions in my mind about life. That is acknowledgement and reconciliation. Mm-hmm. And that's the transaction that takes place with these people between them and their psyche. They're acknowledging and they're reconciling. In some manner of speaking, may not always be positive, as you point out. And I think that is such a basic human desire, a need we have to have. We need to have.
That's absolutely true. And I think one thing that is different in a way from, for example, going to a faith leader to talk to about these questions you have about someone who's gone, for example, is this is two strangers who are having this one-time encounter. They'll probably never see each other again in their lifetimes. And that's something that's different about this. And to me, reminded me of my relationship with documentary subjects in a way. There's something unique about going to a total stranger. Say you're seeking out a psychic reading. You're going to a stranger wondering, this person doesn't know me at all. They're going to hold up a mirror to me and tell me a story about what they see reflected there. What are they going to say? And I think with me and documentary subjects, these are people who I don't know until I begin filming this movie. And I think they have this incredible courage and also vulnerability, but also curiosity. I mean, they're participating in a documentary because they have this curiosity about what will it mean if this total stranger comes in and witnesses my life and then holds up a mirror and tells me a story about what they see reflected there. And I think that we all as humans need witnesses to better understand ourselves. We can't do it on our own. We're reliant on other people telling stories about us and who we are to figure that out for ourselves. And sometimes that can be a really good thing. Sometimes it can be quite destructive you know, if the stories being told about us don't match our internal sense of self, for example, or are harmful or limiting or whatever. And I think sometimes people want to go to a psychic just to like crack whatever their self narrative is, give them a chance to think, I could be someone totally different tomorrow, couldn't I?
Well, and we see that in the film. There are a couple of instances where people come in. The one at the end, near the end of the film, where the surprise, they know each other from high school. That seems to be some part of that, what you're describing, is that there's something in that relationship and in the way they go about it. I also want to point out that the very interesting different psychics and mediums, I'm not sure exactly how we're describing the group as a whole. Is it psychics? Mm-hmm. Is that how we're framing
they
it?
Use or? All different terms, but just psychics is fine. Yeah.
Okay. And a wide array of people here. And I just thought the variety of people that you bring into the film, not only the people who are coming in, I want to say patients, since I, for some reason,
sure.
I want to say, you know, but and then the people who a real propensity for showmanship. A lot of them are aspiring performers, actors, writers, singers. And I think there's something about the artist's sensibility that opens them up to the world. And I could understand why it's not a huge leap between being an artist and being somebody who would feel like they have these kind of psychic insights.
No, I thought about that all the time because I was like, you know, I'm a film director. You see an image, you think, I want to create that image. You have an idea, you write it down. I mean, that's what the creative process is. And so I was really interested in what's the difference? You know, what's the difference between what I'm doing and what you're doing?
It's for sure intuitive what
of
you're
course.
Doing.
I mean, that's what I'm like, sometimes I think my role as a director is to be an emotional barometer for the audience. You know what I mean? That's what I'm doing. I'm being, when I'm filming with people, I'm constantly noticing my own sensations. Did I get chills? Do I feel emotional? Did I laugh? Did I have a flash of self-recognition while filming this complete stranger? And then the other part is you do that again when you're editing. You know, you're trying to start out, say I'm watching a cut, and I have never watched so many cuts of any film as this one, because it's a film that I couldn't edit it in scenes or in acts. You know, I worked with a great editor named Hannah Buck, and often with other projects, I would, you know, let's work on act one today, or let's focus on this scene today. But with this film, every scene was defined by all that came before it. You know, the structure of the film is one where every scene kind of adds a charge to the next scene. And it's a very deliberate, meticulous build to the final moments of the film. And so nothing could be seen out of context. So, you know, let's say I make some tiny change to a shot at 1 hour into the cut, I would have to watch from the beginning of the film to understand if it worked or didn't work. But yeah, in those cases, even it is intuitive. It's taste. It's constantly the process of trying to strip yourself blank and forget everything you know, and sit down to watch a cut and notice your own emotional experience. Like, that's what I'm doing over and over every day. So it is a very intuitive process.
Well, I'll end with this, and that is, it is a beautiful film to look at. It gives the film an ethereal look to it. Mm-hmm. There's something almost otherworldly about some of the framing and some of the shots in the film and the look of it. And so I think just all of these things kind of add into the experience of watching Look Into My Eyes. It's just a really beautiful film to look at. So
thank you so much. Yeah, I worked with a great cinematographer who's also a director named Stephen Mang, and a few other cinematographers also shot on the film. The style for filming the sessions was inspired by a film I love called Afterlife, a Hirokazu Koreeda film from the late 90s, where the premise is that these newly dead people are in a way station between Earth and the afterlife, and they have the chance to pick one memory to bring with them into the afterlife. And the way that these people are filmed is in a way that looks simultaneously like a documentary interview and a counseling session, but there's also an incredibly artful portraiture to it. And that was the approach I wanted to take with these sessions, because I, again, this parallel between documentary filmmaking and psychic sessions, but also it gave me the chance to have a lockdown frame, which I think implies this neutral perspective that gives you, the audience, in this pretty minimalist, austere environment to simply see the feelings, the emotions, the thoughts, the questions play out over people's faces. You know, so the visual style for filming those sessions is really pretty strict and austere and limited. And then we have a slightly different visual style for filming the psychics at home, where it's handheld, a bit chaotic, like intentionally a bit crazy, you know, like the boom drops into the frame at one point. And I wanted to have these two contrasting worlds, you know, the ethereality and the order and the austerity of the psychic sessions, and then the more chaotic lives of the psychics at home. And these two things gradually converge.
I look forward to more. I'm a big fan. So congratulations on all of this.
We've been speaking with the director of Look Into My Eyes, Lana Wilson.
Thank you so much. Your reaction
means
a lot to me, and really appreciate you having me on.
You've been listening to Film School Radio, the on-air online showcase for the best in independent documentary and foreign films. You can find out more about the program at filmschoolradio.com. I'm your host, Mike Kaspar. Thank you for tuning in, and we'll see you next week with another edition of Film School Radio.